Hello, hello. You found us once again on Boomerangs. This is Ruth.
And this is Mike.
Today, we want to announce that we will be taking a break from December 12th, which will be our last posting, and hopefully we will be back on January 9th. We hate to do this, but necessity has warranted that we take a break. You'll have plenty of Christmas music to listen to in the meantime. And that's all the news on that front. Today we want to talk about not the Virginia elections, because by the time this posts, the elections will have been over by 2 weeks, practically. We did want to talk about the effect of the Virginia elections and the hysteria it's caused on many fronts. And what was the other thing that we were going to talk
about? You can talk about the infrastructure bill passing?
You can talk about that.
Okay.
You can tell me about that. I was reading about it, but I'm not as clear on it as I should be.
Okay.
And we both watched a documentary about Helen Keller.
Helen Keller, yeah.
You have been watching Succession.
I have been.
So the Virginia election happened, and the night that it happened, I personally became hysterical. I think I texted you.
Yes, you were in deep despair.
Rachel Maddow, God bless her, had a program on the next night that said every time a Democratic president has come into office, because the Virginia election is always the next year.
It always happens right after. Yeah.
It's the next year. They always lose it. And they usually lose the New Jersey governorship as well.
Right.
But this time, that didn't happen. And there were other positive Democratic wins. Women of color who got into office. Michelle Wu became the mayor of Boston. So there were other things that happened that were positive. And there's just been this teeth gnashing negativity.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that before, but I have to say specifically, this idea that we just learned that the workforce increased by 571,000.
Oh, right.
100,000.
And the stock market hit 36,000. And isn't that significant, but it would be if it was a Republican. They would tout it,
if
but
this
we don't
were
do that.
Trump.
We just wring our hands and say what terrible shape we're in.
I know. And there was this big article in the New York Times, it was either yesterday or today, about how bleak things are for the Democrats. They're not really bad, but everybody feels that it's bad.
Oh, yes. There's this malaise, and we're all just running around like Chicken Little, wondering what we're supposed to do next. And then people are arguing, also infighting. James Carville says it's woke white people that are the reason why we lost in Virginia. And then AOC is coming back to him saying, no one uses that word except old white guys. And so they're at each other. Yeah, it's the end of the world as we know it. I was busy that night, so I was watching the returns, but I was cutting back and forth. And that was a blessing because I didn't have bandwidth mentally to obsess about the meaning of it. Although I have to say, when I turned it on first, there was like a 20-point gap in the beginning. And that was a little bit alarming.
Yeah.
But it's just the governorship of Virginia.
It's only one term.
I do think Democrats, we suck at messaging.
Oh,
we
terrible.
We suck at finding those buzzword, hot button topics that turn people on or off. No amount of explaining that critical race theory is not taught in any elementary school is going to help. It's true, but it's not useful.
What we need to say is that it's racial justice theory.
Well,
something.
I think we should be more aggressive and have ominous commercials showing book burnings in 1930s Germany and talking about how the Youngkin campaign and its supporters want to banish Toni Morrison from the curriculum and say, this is book burning. This is fascism.
I don't
but
think that
don't
will
do
matter.
That.
I don't think that approach will matter because they're fascists anyway. The people who are promoting critical race theory as this ooga booga.
Yeah, but I think the white women in suburbia, they're not fascists. They've been freaked out by that argument to say, I need more control over the curriculum of my child, which is a valid concern.
Or I don't want my child to learn things that are going to make him feel bad about being white.
Right.
That's,
right.
I think, at the core of it.
Yeah.
I don't want to feel bad because I'm white.
I think we're in a trap because I don't think we can answer those charges directly, because by doing so, we're already playing their game.
Yes.
We're coming onto their court
and
playing the game by their rules. And of course, we're going to object because we're crazy socialists.
Oh, it's that argument, like, when did you stop beating your wife?
Right.
So we can't go back at them with the same thing that they're coming at us with. You're right. And we have to have a different answer
to it. We have
to
find a way to demonize them effectively. And we need a Frank Luntz. I think he's the guy. He goes out and he does focus groups. And he finds the words that trigger people. And it's cynical and it's manipulative, but it works.
It works beautifully for them.
We don't play hard.
We don't.
And then all this self-questioning because one governorship turned from blue to red.
It's very difficult to be a Democrat and watch everybody having this circular firing squad, as Hillary Clinton's people used to call it.
Yeah, we have to learn to play offense. We only play defense.
We forgot to mention the Glasgow summit.
Oh, yeah.
Which we talked about a little bit last time. But how did you feel about that? Because
like it was just lip service and they didn't do much, but there are good protests going on.
They did get South Africa, the other countries in that article that you sent me, they were talking about helping South Africa out.
Right.
South Africa has a real problem because they had to ration their water.
Mm-hmm.
They basically said, we're not going to have any water left.
Right.
So you better ration it.
Yeah.
And they did it.
Right.
So they're very aware that they're having a crisis.
Yeah.
You know, I think we should stop calling it a climate crisis and call it climate destruction. It needs to be more visceral.
It did change from climate change to climate crisis. So I actually,
that's true.
I kind of like that, but I agree. It's just so easy to be in denial about it. For me, personally, there's no urgency about it. And there's going to be a tipping point when it's too late to have a sense of urgency. I don't think there will be a turning back if we don't act radically and soon.
Well, two things I wanted to ask you about. One was the methane capture, which are you...
I don't know too much about it.
Methane heats the atmosphere faster than greenhouse gases.
Okay.
And it can be captured
more
easily. It doesn't have the long-term effects. It breaks down faster than greenhouse gases, but it's better to keep it out of the atmosphere.
Right.
And also, there is, I can't remember the name of the entity that's doing a look at basically sucking the CO2 out of the atmosphere.
Oh, right.
There's a government entity that's doing that. Those are two positive things. And the goal is, now I guess it costs $2,000 per square ton of CO2 gases to be pulled out of the atmosphere. What they're looking for is a way for it to cost industries $100.
But it's not doable yet.
It is doable, but only in such small doses that it isn't practical for the means of saving the planet. So at least there's that.
Well, I'm skeptical about that, but I will allow a little bit of hope that maybe there's something to it.
Have you thought of, I mean, you're so passionate about it, but have you thought of joining some kind of a group? Or?
Well, I'm doing baby steps. So what I do now is on my email signature at work, I put to take easy action today against the climate crisis, visit this. And it's a site for Union of Concerned Scientists, and they have an action page. And it's simple. It has a take action page that's got these three little things. You can write a letter to this place, and
that's
they
right.
guide you, and they make it real simple.
Yeah,
and I think stuff like that makes a difference.
It does, because that's the only way that policies get changed.
Yeah.
And it's all about that.
So I'm doing that. I'm just waking up about it, because I don't know, it does surprise me that there isn't more alarm.
I think there is alarm. I think there's alarm amongst the people who are in belief about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the lack of alarm comes from the people who don't believe in it.
Well, and we're in a privileged group, economically, racially, all of that.
Yeah.
Nationally, hemispherically, we're in the privileged side of things. And so we have a natural propensity to just assume that it won't harm me. I'll find a way out. I can move to Canada, or I can do this, or I can do that. We think we're unaffected, or at least we think we have enough agency to outsmart this thing.
Don't the people who are suffering from flooding and wildfires, they're not in denial
about
it. That's
true. No, it wasn't supposed to affect that, as far as I know.
No, in China too.
We weren't expecting inland floods in places that never had them before.
Exactly. Shall we go on to talk about...
Oh, infrastructure bill passing?
Oh, yes. You were going to tell me about
that. Well, I don't know a ton about it, but I think it's a
good thing. It got separated from the Build Back Better bill.
It did. And we have to believe that the progressives in the House wouldn't have agreed to that if there weren't some firm plan in place. I read today that there's going to be like a week or two with no action at all because people are going to different places.
That's right. They're on recess, aren't
right?
they?
Right. Something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't have to get up every day and go, today, did they pass the Build Back Better plan?
My understanding is that they're back on November 15th.
And they want to pass it by Thanksgiving. This book I'm reading called Dopamine Nation, she talks about how we're all kind of in an addictive state now because there used to be a thing called the delay deficit where people would decide, well, I could get something really good now or I could get something really even better if I waited a bit. And they're finding that people are going more and more for getting less now.
Oh,
than waiting because our brains are being altered. We're like little lab rats and we're like, no, I want the instant reward. Even if
I want one marshmallow now as opposed to two marshmallows.
That's exactly
later.
It. You must have read the book.
No, it's a famous experiment.
Oh, she talks about that.
Yeah.
Just that.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
The marshmallows. I think we are in an amazing time. Anyhow, what were we talking about?
The infrastructure.
Oh, infrastructure,
So the infrastructure bill that was a bipartisan bill
came out of the Senate and it went to the House for their vote. So that means when the House passes it, I believe it's passed.
The thing that's happening with the Build Back Better bill, which is a terrible name, which should be changed immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
The House voted on that because they believe that Manchin and Sinema will come around.
Yeah.
There is some sort of tacit agreement between somebody somewhere in the Senate that they're going to capitulate. The health and well-being of the democracy hinges on Manchin's and Kyrsten Sinema's shoulders.
Well, yeah, that brings up the other thing we haven't even gotten to yet, and neither has the Congress, is the voting rights, which also isn't passing. I came across an editorial in a West Virginia online newspaper.
Okay.
And it was all about, thank God for Joe Manchin, because he's really making sure that we don't pass anything that we can't afford. And I thought, can't afford? It's all paid for.
Yeah.
But then I looked at who wrote the editorial, and it was an editorial by two people. One was president of the West Virginia Manufacturing Association, and the other was head of the West Virginia Oil and Gas Association, you know. So, right.
The weird thing is that the infrastructure bill isn't paid for. Nobody's saying, how are we going to pay for this?
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, okay.
And the Build Back Better bill is paid for.
Right. And yet that's the one we can't get through.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. Should we go on to briefly talk about Helen Keller?
Oh, sure.
I was obsessed with Helen Keller from the time that I watched The Miracle Worker. I must have been 8 or 10, and it was so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship between Annie Sullivan and Helen Keller, I wanted to be a teacher for the blind for the longest time. Come to find out that Helen Keller, who we know is just brilliant, just a singularly brilliant mind, that she was a radical and that she never saw a black person in her life.
Right.
But knows about oppression.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling, actually.
That's right.
That she was able to understand those concepts.
Right. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I wasn't able to finish the whole thing, so I still have a ways to go.
I have 20 minutes left, but I just thought it was really cool to see it. It's a lot of the commentary is by deafblind people, and it's so cool to see them
In their disabilities.
Breaking my stereotype of what limitations face a deafblind person.
Yes.
And one of them was objecting to an ism that she called oralism, which
was favoring
spoken
word
communication over signed or over visual.
Yeah.
And I thought, isn't that interesting? We make assumptions about things all the time. And it's not because we're bad, I don't think. It's because we're human and we're programmed to classify things because it helps keep us safe. It keeps the tigers away. But to be made aware of it and go, oh, that's interesting. I don't know if I agree with it or not, but I have to say I like the fact that I had never given thought to it.
Well, remember in Children of a Lesser God, there's a real argument between whether American Sign Language is a language the same way that English is a language.
Oh, right, right.
And whether one is more valid than the other.
Yes. Her story is fascinating. I don't know much about it. One thing that's interesting is the part where they talk about her developing these progressive ideas and becoming a socialist, which apparently socialism was very big
was
in
very
the
big.
Early part of the 20th century. So she wasn't an outlier, but people said she must have been programmed to have these views.
Oh, by Annie
Sullivan
and John Macy.
Yeah, because they couldn't even imagine that a woman to begin with, much less a woman who is blind and deaf, could form her own opinions. Oh, and she made this great quote. I'm sure you noticed it too. She said, I can't quote it exactly, but she said, being a woman is a much greater handicap in this culture than being blind or deaf.
Being blind or deaf, which is incredible.
In the early 20th century.
Did she recognize that? It's called Becoming Helen Keller.
Right.
And it's on
and
PBS.
I didn't know she made a feature film called...
I haven't gotten that far yet.
She made this film. It failed. It was made and it got out, but it wasn't embraced.
Seen.
The idea behind the film was to kind of raise consciousness about treating disabled people as full people. And then they go on the vaudeville circuit because they can make more money that way than writing scholarly articles.
Yeah.
And even though she's got like an advanced degree at this point.
I know, but they always worried about money, they said.
Yeah, she graduated from Radcliffe.
Yeah.
And she really graduated from Radcliffe. It wasn't a handout.
She really did.
Yeah. It was just amazing. But God, what a dynamic woman.
I'm trying to think of anyone who at her age was, I mean, I'm sure that there were other people who were as brilliant as she was.
Right.
But to do what she did in the society that she was and they were seen as limitations.
Right.
And to be able to learn to read and to write.
Yeah.
And to have concepts and not just physically write, but to write in such an eloquent voice.
Right. It seems like her hunger to know things and experience things trumped everything else. She just was driven to know. And it's beautiful. And Sherry Jones is in it.
And she's fantastic.
She's really good.
She's great.
I don't like her dress too much.
No, the cowl doesn't work. The low cowl does not work for her. But she's amazing.
Yeah.
Sherry Jones. Anywho, Succession.
Succession is back.
I've watched back three episodes. A long hiatus,
it was gone
right?
Forever, yeah.
Like 2 years or something.
Yeah, and you know, I'm so bad with plot. I thought, oh, I'm going to have to watch the first two seasons all over again to kind of remind myself, because I do think I have ADD, so it's just hard for me to stay on plot. But the nice thing about it is they must have known there were people like me around, because if you've watched those, even if it was 2 years ago, there's enough in the first three episodes that it's like, oh, that's right, he was fighting him because of that. Oh, that's right. He didn't like him because of that. Oh, that's right. He had that thing with the shipping lines and blah, blah, blah. It all kind of comes back.
Oh, it's like a soap opera.
Somehow.
In soap operas,
they drop little reminders.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
They don't seem obvious. That. They just seem like part of the plot.
Now, as far as Succession is concerned, I watched a number of episodes and I couldn't stick with it.
Right.
Mostly because of Kieran Culkin and his character and how much joy he took in the suffering of others.
Mm. He's a smartass. No, he is. He's kind of the evil child.
Yes, and he stirs the pot whenever he can.
Yeah. But he's also treated so badly.
Yes, he is.
That's what balances it off for me. That's why I can still have some compassion for him. But I love how the three kids have their own, just like any family where there's trauma and dysfunction, they've all created their own personas as a defense against it. And none of them are working. Kendall, he's kind of like this mentally vacant idiot who's driven to be in power. He knows how to act like a powerful person, but he doesn't know how to think like a powerful person.
Got it.
You know?
Got it, yeah.
And then Shiv, the daughter, she's like on top of everything. And she seems to have it all together, but she's disconnected from the father and from the brother. There's no connection. And they make a point of it with her and her marriage. They're always saying, I love you. And whenever they say it, it's just so hard to listen to because it's so unreal.
Oh.
You know, they're like playing at having a relationship.
Yeah.
And then Roman, I think, is the one that Culkin plays.
Yes.
And he's just the, what do they call it? He's like the bad boy or the mascot, you know, who just gets abused all
jester.
The time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kendall always seemed like he really wanted Logan, his father's approval.
Right.
That more than Shiv, who has cover from being a woman.
Right.
Whether she decides to take that or not.
Yeah.
Kendall desperately wants his father's recognition.
Right.
And love. And can never get it. Even though he seems like the favorite.
He's in line.
Most likely.
He's the successor.
Yeah.
Because he's the oldest. So he's supposed to be in line. I can see why he's so fucked up, because there should be no question, there should be no debate. But because the father is so evil, he never lets any of them know where they stand.
I know. And
it's
even
so
Roman
sad.
Is in the mix.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow.
Oh, yeah. He's a player. And in season three, they're looking for a new head of the company. And it's brutal how the father treats them.
And that's
I can see why it's uncomfortable to watch.
It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I
think that each of the kids, if nothing else, they have a lot of spunk. And I like spunk. Unlike Mr. Grant. Yeah. And I think there is some schadenfreude in watching people who have everything and seeing that on a certain level they have nothing at all.
Well, they're so vacant. You're right. They have everything and nothing.
Yeah, yeah, they totally do. But it's fun. And I gotta say, by the end of episode three, some sparks start to fly.
Really?
Plot-wise, some stuff starts to happen.
Oh, cool. I've heard so much chatter about it, and so many people that I listen to and read love it.
Yeah. I mean, it's Shakespearean in a way. It's family dysfunction.
Yeah.
It's royalty in dysfunction.
It's interesting. It is Shakespearean. It's very well acted.
Yeah, that's
and
true,
it's
too.
Very well written. I can't deny that it has that going for it.
Yeah.
I just have a personal reaction to
it. Sure, I know. I could see that. Because there is a level of cruelty that pervades it that is hard to take.
Yeah.
And if you have a sensitivity to that, I can see wanting to back off from it.
But there's nothing else on that has that kind of buzz right now.
Is it really?
Yeah.
The Crown, maybe, when it comes back. Anyway.
And next week, I'm going to report on Spencer.
Oh.
That's Kristen Stewart's interpretation of Diana.
Oh.
At the end of her marriage, the few days that she spent with the royal family and Charles at, it looks like it's pronounced Sardegam, but I don't think that's what it is, but it's a family retreat, I guess.
Right, like Balmoral, one of those places, one of their palaces yeah. they like to go hang out to feel like they're regular folk.
I don't know what to expect, but I've also heard that Kristen Stewart, who I love, is sensational as Diana.
Oh, that's cool.
It's amazing to think about how many people have played Diana and how they vaguely resembled her.
Oh, yeah.
Even though none of those actresses look anything alike.
Right. God, on YouTube, I came across a musical.
Oh no. Diana the musical?
Yeah.
Oh, it's supposed to be awful.
It is horrible. I watched two or three numbers, but it's horrible.
And it was a big deal that it got filmed, and it was filmed like a play, right?
Yeah, kind of like Hamilton.
Yeah.
See, but that's, again, it's fun to watch people with lots of money fail. That's why Succession is so good.
I think that's why. Yeah. I think that's why. Well, we've come to the end of our time.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Thank you for hanging with us, Boomers, and we will talk to you again in a week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.